in a tune, tune. Whipping the blouse and skull.
DJ Boomer, DJ Boomer.
Have some fun.
All right. You are responding to a report of a domestic altercation.
The guy called on this fight.
The guy called?
The guy called, not the woman.
Oh, I'm going outside.
Hey sir, how you doing?
Speakers can use the cut up here.
Sir, what's going on? How are you?
No. Look. This is, I'm the one bleeding. I'm the one, you got the wrong guy. Get in there and arrest that bitch.
Okay, well,
she's,
I need you to relax a little bit,
she's
sir.
She's crazy, she's nuts. Look, I need you to fucking do your fucking job.
Not a problem. Can you come here for a second? Just put that down for me, sir?
That's right, look, keep on walking. I'm not scared of you. Keep going. That's right. Walk away.
Ma'am, I need you to drop the knife, ma'am. Please. I understand what's going on. I need you to relax.
I'm
here to help you.
Why are you arresting him?
Well, I just got to make sure you're okay, ma'am. I do see it, but I need you. I can only talk to you with the knife down.
He did.
I need you to put the knife down, ma'am.
Why are you arresting him?
I understand it. Just relax for me real quick. Can you put the knife down for me, please?
That's
all I understand that. Thank you. Thank you so much. Please, get down on your knees. Please.
Fine.
Okay, lay down on your stomach, please.
Ouch.
Please lay down on your stomach.
Good.
Thank you. I appreciate you.
Yeah. Do you guys ever drill at the range where somebody runs the other way and you shoot? You know what I'm talking about? So we would be at the range and I'd be the, call the shots. Uh-huh. And I'd have one officer getting ready to shoot that range and the rules were this. I'm going to yell fire. Officer with the gun is going to pull it and shoot one. At the same time, I'm also facing this way, getting ready to run. So when I say fire, you run as fast as you can. And stop when you hear the rim. And so the rule has always been 21 feet.
Right.
How fast can I get this guy's way
faster. Absolutely.
You know, 30-something, 35. Right. So we say with someone with the knife and 21 feet, first of all, if you can't get distance, get cover.
Right. Time distance to cover.
Right. I didn't come up the holster because, the people we serve, you come out the holster and they see the gun, it usually elevates the situation.
I got you.
That's interesting. Man.
Good point. Yeah.
So that's why I had it here, but not out fully.
And that's something you learn on the street, right? They don't tell in the academy, they wouldn't tell you that.
Right.
They say, have your weapon out, but after years of work and you're like, this
I also saw that he had a better rapport with her, so I didn't want to.
And I had less lethal anyway.
He had
less lethal. I had the taser out just in case.
Oh,
because
okay.
once you pull it out, I renew.
Yeah. Well, I see you, a lot of times they'll communicate. You already knew it, though.
I already knew because we spoke about it at the beginning. I said, I'm going to do less lethal. You do lethal.
Okay.
And he was primary, so perfect. Yeah. I was just going
to
back up.
And if you, it's good to be at a low ready, but that can, you don't know her mentality. Thank you.
Right.
That can make the situation even worse.
Yeah. Right.
That's why it's even good to be from the side. Even if he would have had the gun out, at least have a barrier in between so that she doesn't see it.
Agreed. Right.
And if you point at us with level one use of force, we got right on that now.
Right.
It's pointing.
See, that's a new footnote that I'll be using when we're training.
Do you guys think that officers are less likely to be safe because there's paperwork involved?
I think that's a great question. I think
that was a, FOP was worried about that.
I think there's a level of hesitation now.
Yeah.
For sure. So, yeah, in the long run, there's a chance that you're less safe because that fraction. Hesitation could.
So
but you know, I'd rather just you got it right anyway.
That's us.
You know what I mean?
You know, guys are.
Some exactly. Are, right? Right.
What's, when does the level go to have the right report? Can you have it out by
shot? At pointing.
Right. So if you bring
it. As long as you bring it up, you point it, you got it right on it.
Kind of makes sense. You're 4 pounds away from it. How many of these do you want to do? That's what you got to determine which ones I pick.
Doesn't matter. We can do a couple.
Two more.
Yeah. Okay. Two, three more.
All right. Good.
You are responding to a frantic 911 call about a man assaulting a woman with a hammer.
Help me! My husband! He's gone crazy! I think he's gonna kill someone. There's kids in there.
Okay. No problem, man. Just stay behind me, sir. How we doing, sir? What do you got in your hand, sir? What do you have in your hand, sir? I need to see that. Get down, drop it, sir.
You'd be surprised how many people shoot at that point. Not cops.
Drag him up. No size. Same. Sir, come out with your hand, sir. Come out with your hand, sir. Drop it. Drop it, sir. Drop the hammer, sir. I'm here to help you. I don't want to hurt you. Help you, sir, please. Help me help you. I'm not here to hurt you. I can't talk to you unless you got that hammer down, sir. Please, drop the hammer for me. I'm here to help you. It's not that serious, my brother.
Couldn't have been any better. Let me just...
Do we get the text or the call?
You'll hear the call.
Okay.
But I'll tell you up front, though. What happens is you go to pull a guy over your cruiser.
Can we utilize these barriers?
Yes, yeah. Right. So, it's coming.
The guy doesn't stop right away, doesn't actually take off, but he takes you down a kind of lonely road.
Okay.
Okay, so that's
perfect. Let's do it.
You stop a vehicle for a speeding violation. After turning on your flashers, the driver slowed and continued for half a mile before coming to a stop.
Sir, I need you to step out the vehicle, please. Throw your keys out of the vehicle, please. Roll down all your windows, turn your keys off, turn the car off, throw your keys.
Get away!
Sir, put it down.
Don't come any closer to me!
Drop the gun!
I never said that!
Drop the gun, sir!
Don't
drop the gun! I don't want you to hurt yourself, sir! Drop the gun! Drop the gun! Drop the gun, sir!
I understand.
Let me help you! Let me help you!
Put it down, put it down!
Let me help you!
Put it down,
sir! Drop it! Drop it!
Kill me!
Drop it!
Put it down!
Drop it! I shot him when he first got out of the car. Yeah. And I saw the gun.
So he didn't have it to his head either.
When he came out, I just saw the gun.
Yeah.
And immediately doing
I didn't
that.
I didn't hear the shot.
If he's gonna.
I didn't hear the shot. Did you actually shoot?
Yeah.
Pull trigger.
Oh, yeah. That's certainly a possibility.
Right. What else could it be?
Yeah.
You're getting out of a car.
Hell yeah. When you get out fast like that, I don't know what your intentions are with that weapon.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, as soon as he got out with the gun. As soon as I saw the gun raise, I immediately shot him. Yeah.
So that's why
I just wrapped it again.
The one thing most cops do in this one, and which is fine, they don't do anything until he starts walking. But the problem is from this position,
you can go to this.
Exactly.
That's why when I saw this,
right.
Even when he got out the car, I don't know what you're doing with that gun. I'm not going to wait to get shot to make a decision.
Yeah,
right. Nobody, then it's too late. Yeah.
Not many people think like that.
Most cops do wait till he's almost on him. Until they're all saying they're all waiting for him to go do this.
I'm not waiting. It's too late when you do that.
Exactly. So what we do is we do a demonstration for him. Mm-hmm. So we tell him, all right, you have your gun out and point it at me. Hold your finger and point it at me, and I would say to him, all right, I'm gonna shoot. So you shoot when I go like this, bang. By the time I say
too
bang.
Late.
They don't get the shot off.
No.
So it's interesting because people will, as he is has the gun to his head, people are doing what you guys are doing. Let's say that you mm-hmm. shoot immediately came out. And now we're talking. I get that you don't want to shoot this guy who shoots out.
Yeah.
But the point from here to here,
that's nothing.
Is nothing. Right. So we talk about articulating imminent threat mm-hmm. and you know deadly force and all that. Is this an imminent threat?
Yes, it is.
It's 0.25 seconds to go from here to here.
Absolutely.
But your philosophy is, like you said, the top to you, right? What's the paperwork? What's the general order say? What's the law say? Am I going to go? What's the media coverage going to be when I shoot a suicidal man?
Yeah.
Well, If you can articulate, I didn't shoot him because he was suicidal. I shot him because
he had a gun.
I didn't have good enough cover. I didn't have any backup, whatever the reasons were. And there was only one way to do this. You know, I told him to put the gun down once. Maybe you got that out.
Yeah.
Okay, he didn't listen to me. You know? But generally what you'll see is you'll see the standoff. Put it down, put it down, put it down.
Mm-hmm.
And then, oh my God, he'll start walking. No one will shoot. No one will shoot. No, and then finally.
Yeah.
And what do we always emphasize here too? Say, you know, we're not going to tell you when you should shoot.
No.
Or we're not going to tell you that you should have shot. But we're going to show you what would have happened.
Absolutely.
And that's what would happen.
Because everybody's threat level is different.
Right.
Every officer's threat level is different.
Right.
As soon as he jumped out of that vehicle, I was alert from the car stop initially.
Well, sure.
Because he wasn't compliant.
Right. Exactly.
So when you don't comply, a lonely road. You don't know what he's doing inside that vehicle. You can't see because of the tent. He's not complying with the turn the car off, throw your keys outside.
Yeah.
So
that's
not good at all. So my alert level is through the roof. So I already have my gun out with the car door out, and I'm waiting.
Yeah.
As soon as you get out of that gun, it's over.
You're right. Nice.
One more?
Sure.
You were on foot patrol and just outside the clinic.
So if he doesn't go down, he runs down the hallway and he takes another hostage. So yeah, you did great.
This scene we talked about, once again, thriving in the arena of stress, right? This is probably one of the most stressful things you're gonna have to do as a police officer because of all of the innocent people who are running away.
Right.
And they were nice to you in this scene, right? In real life situation, those people are seeing you as a beacon of hope, like, thank God you're here, right?
But
they'll want to talk to you and hug you and all those type of things.
We don't got time for that.
And then we talked about an active shooter training. We have to step over injured people. We may have to step over injured people, right? We may have to step over our injured partner.
Definitely.
He may take on and be bleeding out, and we cannot render
aid
because this guy is somewhere.
Still hot in.
And that's not something a lot of civilians think.
Not nothing.
You know, they don't think about it. They think that you can do it all.
Right.
So I like putting
all the active shooters. We like to do this one at least once so that they get to see one.
This is very similar to Nashville.
It is.
Very
did you
similar.
See the video? Man, that they did a fantastic
phenomenal. They played it.
I mean, it looked like a training video.
Yeah.
I mean, they were right on. And the other thing we like to say about this one also is this is one because you have the probable cause. You don't have to have that gun doesn't have to be pointed at you. That gun, he could be running away, you can still shoot.
He doesn't name the threat.
Because he still remains a threat, exactly.
Yeah, as soon as we saw him pointing the gun,
it was
over.
Yeah, there's nothing to talk about.
No,
sorry.
Sorry, not sorry.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. It's crazy that this is a simulator, but it still gets you, like, I'm a little close to the idea.
Oh, yeah, no, it will get your heart rate up, no question.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah.
I'm glad that you guys are doing this, especially with civilians, so they can understand that it's a tough job, man.
Yeah.
Only a certain, you know, population could do it.
Yeah. That's the other thing. Yeah. We always mention, you know, that there's a lot of job profession, and ours is the only job profession where using deadlift force is not only is an option, but it's also our job to do when we have to do it. We cannot back away from doing it.
Absolutely. Yeah, you'll get in trouble for not shooting something.
Right.
Absolutely.
Right.
Which
is a weird thing.
Right.
Well, you're just taking the Texas, right?
Right.
What were those cops doing? Why were they standing there?
Right.
especially with all the equipment we have.
Right.
Did that come back to a training thing? Did you hear any more about that? Or come back to a little malfeasance, a little bit of both?
I think it has something to do with a supervisor saying not to go in and then the cops not want to override that. That's what I always think, but I don't know.
Thinking about policy instead of
safety. Yeah, just think if you were there and your sergeant says you're not going in.
Yeah.
Now, are you going to say,
it's insubordination.
Are you
going to
say,
the
hell
yeah.
with you, I'm going in?
Probably.
Some
I
people
would.
Just
the day
would. So the question is, well, yeah, I think all of us would because that's what we're trained.
Exactly.
We
you can remain a coward over here. I'm going to go handle that business.
Right.
Right.
Fire me later and I have a nice little suit. I'm okay with that.
Yes. Slippery. But basically, you're just going to drive straight ahead. If you'll see that when you'll see directions to call out intersections, obviously you don't have to do that. But like for a new officer, we want them to know, get the idea of where they are, the situational awareness, so that if the dispatcher comes and says, "What's your location?" you don't say, "Stand by, I don't know where I am," you know, that kind of thing.
Gotcha.
So we want to get them used to knowing where they are at all times, especially. Important for like a state trooper that's in cities and things like that. Alright, so you know where everything is down here, so just start it up and just drive straight ahead. No calls, anything like that. Like I said, it will start raining and then the wipers are on the steering. Turn right at the next intersection. You will feel the slipperiness of this. If you're going too fast, you'll slide right into the stop sign. So you can feel that the car actually could actually feel how it reacts to the roadway. Alright, you ready?
I'm ready.
Alright. Well, he took away the city spot. So I'm going to give you a one that's a rural road.
Okay.
You probably have to get out and outside. No, it's
not.
We're going to give you a. You're going to respond, it's going to be a rural situation.
Okay.
What's going to happen is you're going to be heading towards a house where the girlfriend has called the dispatcher and said that her boyfriend is coming to her house and killed her.
It's been straight ahead. You're going to have a left-hand turn. I don't know what's coming. You are on a rural road, so there's not really much place
to go. 518, we just got a call from a hysterical female stating her ex-boyfriend is on his way to her house to kill her. She lives in the residential area off Highway 56. You are authorized to run lights and sirens. Stand by for additional brake.
Copy that.
525, dispatch. Are you available to assist 518 on that domestic call?
Be careful right around this.
Dispatch from 525. Show me the route from the office on Highway 56.
Hysterical female, I
don't know why.
Definitely gonna mute that one.
525, I show you in route at 1458. 518 from dispatch, are you in route?
Ask him if you're in route. Are you here
again? 10-4, I'm in route.
Dispatch copy, 1502.
I see the flag, I see the truck.
anybody outside.
See the subject, man, green jacket. He's got a gun in his hand. How nice.
He will shoot it.
Sir, drop the gun.
Yeah, so the training thing here is you wait for the backup. You want a normal situation like this with the gun. If you have to, if it turns into a hostage, it's better that it wasn't an active shooter thing. You don't want to go right in after him.
That's pretty good.
You know where everything, right? Lights?
Yep.
Siren. Alright, so this is just a warm-up just to get you used to the car. You're going to find the steering is a little bit, no, it's actually the opposite.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's very loose. This ain't good. This ain't working right now.
Okay.
So we can just
change. I'll
have to put it on.
It's a lunch table.
Yeah.
Alright.
Your air conditioning doesn't work, so I'm going
to grab it a little bit.
Alright, go ahead and start it up. And so this is just a warm-up.
It's 518. Your familiarization exercise has begun. 518 dispatch. What is your current location?
Exactly. Yep. He's the first out of it.
518. Your simulator is a high speed Velcro to the dash. I will call you in it now. That cell phone doesn't work, 518. We'll send the information to your mobile data terminal.
Just straight ahead, and do what they tell you to do.
Oh wow, this is weird. Okay. I see what you were saying.
Yep.
To activate level 2 of your overhead lights without the siren, move the slide switch to the number 2 position. To add the siren, move the selection switch to
put your
position
siren on
3.
Tell me to do. You have to move the switch first.
Yep.
To change the siren tone, rotate the knob to the right of the slide switch. You have 3 tones to choose from.
Oh, not the wheel.
The air horn button is located below the slide switch on the control panel. The vehicle's horn will also change the siren tone while level 3
is active. I don't know if you have cards to do that. If you hit the horn, it'll change the siren sound also. Just your horn.
I didn't know that. Oh, cool.
Not all cars, but the Explorer.
518, you may want to turn on your headlights.
They're on the dash.
Activate your high beams. To activate your high beam headlights, push the turn signal stalk forward. By the way, look out for that yellow car.
Oh. Nice.
Yeah,
518, we have intentionally caused this accident. Future collisions during scenarios may occur if you fail to maintain situational awareness and mitigate hazards.
Got that out of paperwork, buddy.
Keep your seatbelt on now. Oh. Don't you be getting out there.
I thought it was over, okay?
No, we're going to give you a call. We're going to give you something to really... So this is the great thing about you all trained on the track, actually. So, with a rookie, he's never been on the road and actually had to avoid traffic. You know how people are, they pull out in front of you, they stop, they may pull in the left lane. So this is what you're going to get to do. You're going to be responding to a call, and cars are going to be pulling up, so you're going to be careful at those intersections and all those kind of things. And again, what we'll train them is get there as quickly as you can, but get there safely. Win. What's important now? It's no help to anybody if you get an accident. Alright? So start up the car and you're going to get a call, or you got to shut it off first. And then start.
518 dispatch. Respond to the intersection of 5th and H Hotel to assist 515 for report of a fight in progress. Level 3 emergency equipment is authorized. How copy? I have you en route at 1301. Break 527, go with your traffic. Dispatch 527. Final stop 7th tag Bravo Alpha Victor 0427. Bravo Alpha to Victor 0427 on a black Jeep, occupied two times.
Seen plenty of them in your jurisdiction. This is was donated to us by Dodge, the obvious Dodge Charger. It doesn't have an engine in it, so they economize a little bit, but it basically gives our visitors an idea of what the current state of the art is as far as police cars go. Even has a computer display in the dash, which I know you guys
really?
Still you guys still probably have them on a stalk right in,
right.
in the passenger seat. Yeah, take a look around the other side. It looks kind of nice. Yeah.
Very convenient.
Yeah, and it eliminates that danger of MDT on the passenger side.
That's extremely convenient.
I haven't ridden too many cruisers with those MDTs in them, but I know the times that I have, I felt very uncomfortable if we were getting a crash or something, you know.
What's the problem?
So I retired from Montgomery County Police,
right,
just about a half hour north of here.
Yeah.
I was with them for 31 years.
Wow.
Then I was in a civilian job with the Metro Transit Police down right around the corner here for about 8 years, doing video surveillance and, evidence stuff. So,
thank you for your service.
Oh, yeah. No problem. It was a good career. Yeah, so we can go over this way now. And this particular section. This particular section of the museum explores the connection between pop culture and law enforcement. You know, what you see in the TV and the movies is obviously not completely realistic. It can be realistic in some senses, but if you have time to watch the video in here, we have a retired DC police lieutenant and a actor who was part of the Law and Order series who sit down and they discuss. Yeah, that's at the Brass Monkey Saloon up in Manhattan, which is kind of a popular cop bar up there. And what they do is they sit down and they review various video clips of movies and television shows over the years, going all the way back to like Dragnet and Adam 12 and coming right up to modern day movies. And they explore the connection between, or you know, the ability of people in Hollywood and in the industry to be able to, make things accurate as far as, you know, what they see. They try to make it accurate. They can't always get there. The obvious thing being that in just about every law enforcement show or movie you're going to see, there's going to be gunfire. When in reality, we know that over 70% of officers never fire their guns on duty throughout the course of their career. So, of course, they have to make it exciting to get it interesting and get their ratings. But it's an interesting conversation between the retired lieutenant and the actor about how Hollywood does try to get it right, but they can only get it so far. Yeah, and RoboCop, that's actually RoboCop 2. That was in the late 1990s, was a vision of you know, what policing might look like in today's world. Of course, we know that that is obviously not how things evolved. I mean, can you imagine walking around Baltimore City and something like that, trying to relate to your, you know, your people in your communities and everything? They probably wouldn't talk to you.
I would die for my country to come back as RoboCop. Like, I just pull
up. All right, we can head over this way. So in this area of the museum, behind these glass walls is what we call our history time capsules. And chronologically from left to right, it starts all the way on the left end with the introduction of law enforcement into the United States in the late 1700s, early 1800s. And you can see one of the initial uniforms down there from the Boston Police Department bears a striking resemblance to the bobbies over in London. There was a Yeah, believe it or not, there was debate back then whether police officers would even wear uniforms in the United States. And then, of course, the follow-up debate to that was whether they would carry guns. We all know how that ended up.
The Untouchables up
there anyway? We do. Yeah, we're gonna get to that in a second.
That movie came back on, I watched it four times.
Yeah.
It's an amazing movie.
Wow. So then in the early 1900s, the first federal law enforcement agency charged with investigating federal crimes was the Bureau of Investigation. And they obviously investigated federal crimes up until about 1920 when the Prohibition Act was passed, and then the federal government formed the Bureau of Prohibition. Those were also federal agents tasked with investigating, obviously, alcohol crimes.
Right.
Obviously. Can't imagine what it would be like today, you know, if we had to all of a sudden take the beer, wine, and liquor away from everybody. Right. We'd have riots in the streets, probably. But then in the 1930s, when Prohibition was repealed, since you asked about Untouchables, I'll touch on that as well. During Prohibition, of course, you had the Untouchables was a very popular group in the Bureau of Prohibition, headed up by, where is he? I lost him. Oh, Elliot Ness he was one of the Untouchables. He was the guy who headed up the Untouchables, very key figure in the Prohibition era and his ongoing battles with Al Capone. We've got Al Capone's handgun here someplace, I think right over there. Over here we have Al Capone's handgun.
Which one?
Good question.
Yeah,
it's Elliot Ness. I'm not sure which one is his, to be honest with you. Let's see, it's that third one from the bottom with the pearl. Yeah, so it's going to be this one. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And as you're going through the museum, if you want to open drawers and take a look at things, there's a little video that's supposed to play there, but it takes a while to get started. But there's little surprises in the drawers if you want to look at them. Okay, so after Prohibition was repealed in the 1930s, you had a whole bunch of agents with the Bureau of Prohibition who didn't have anything to do. And so what they did is they merged with the Bureau of Investigation, and that's what became the FBI under, you know, as we know it today, under the direction of their first director, J. Edgar Hoover. And we'll talk a little bit more about J. Edgar Hoover in just a minute. But just moving on through this, we've got the Civil Rights era, 1954, Brown versus Board of Education that mandated the integration of schools, where you had federal government, you know, in the Supreme Court saying, okay, the schools have to be integrated now. So you had federal agencies, mainly the U.S. Marshals, that had to get in cooperation with all the state and local agencies. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as you see in the photograph, you see that the police and the U.S. Marshals actually had to escort kids to school so they got there safely. This little artifact right here, that armband right here, is actually being worn by that U.S. Marshal right in that photo right there. Kind of interesting.
much history.
Yeah, a lot of history here. A lot of history. And then moving into more recent times that you guys may have had more exposure to is the war on drugs. I did 5 years in narcotics, working undercover, and did about 15 years in electronic surveillance after that. So that was a big part of my career, the crack epidemic, you know, back in the 80s and 90s.
Did you see a lot of that down here?
We did, yeah. We, you know, crack basically replaced PCP when it came around. And we had a lot of problems. We had, you know, crack houses all over the place. Mm-hmm. That was when I first went into narcotics, that was pretty much all we did was just, you know, two controlled buys out of a crack house, get the search warrant, then figure out when they're holding, and then SWAT goes in and raids it.
Nice.
Yeah. Over in this side of the museum, highlights specialized units that obviously larger police departments give you the opportunity to participate in specialized investigations or specialized units. We've got this ATF undercover motorcycle gang investigation. We've got some electronic surveillance in here. Over here, we've got canine and SWAT. If you guys would excuse me just 1 minute, I need to re-up my parking meter. So yeah, these videos over here, this is from Atlanta Police Department, and this is from Hennepin County in Minnesota, the Marine Police. And it's basically an 8-hour video of their 8-hour shifts, and you can fast forward and rewind through the video and, you know, stop and review the things that look more interesting. But I think that's a really neat display.
It is.
Okay, sneak back around the corner here. This particular area has some videos that you can watch about presidential assassinations, armed police forces. Coming up on the screen, you'll see Lucius Amerson, who was a sheriff in Alabama back during the civil rights era. That's him right there on the left. And he played a significant role in the civil rights era in Alabama because he took over a department that had a serious problem with police brutality and racism. And he actually ended up arresting some white officers on his department for various brutality complaints and race-related issues. So he got reelected over a period of 20 years. So he had a pretty significant impact down there.
Lucius
Amerson.
Amerson.
A-M-E-R-S-O-N. Yeah. And then there's a video there about J. Edgar Hoover, who I mentioned was the first director of the FBI. This display over here has some of his... this display has some artifacts from one of J. Edgar Hoover's offices. And when the younger kids come through, we like to point out that big white thing on the desk is called a telephone. Some of them don't realize that that's what that is. Yeah. And then of course we have to include our corrections personnel with us. As you guys know, depending on what jurisdictions you're in, the jails and the prisons may be handled by a sheriff's office. They may be handled by a separate corrections department. Sometimes the police handle everything. So you may have noticed a helicopter hanging from the ceiling.
Yes.
January 13th, 1982, I was driving home from classes at the University of Maryland, and a driving snowstorm hit the DC area. And I'm listening to the radio, and I hear a story about Air Florida Flight 90 that tried to take off from National Airport, which is about 5 miles from here. And because of the snowstorm and the lack of de-icing on the wings of the airplane tried to take off, crashed into the 14th Street Bridge, and bounced into the frozen river, the Potomac River, which was frozen over. Of course, all kinds of agencies converged on the area, fire rescue and police agencies, to try and help out. ultimately they found six survivors on top of the ice trying to climb to safety. The ice was all broken up, so it was very difficult for them. This is U.S. Park Police helicopter Eagle One, and they got word of the incident and responded to the scene and probably made one of the most dramatic rescues you'll ever see on video. And we do have a video of that over here. If you have time to watch it, it's pretty dramatic. They hovered down within inches of the surface of the river, and the rescue technician got out on the skids with no harness, and the helicopters were not set up for rescue at that time. They were strictly medevac helicopters back then. But nevertheless, the rescue technician got out on the skids, grabbed people by their arms, picked them up, and the pilot then flew over to the shoreline, dropped them off one at a time. Wow. There were originally six people on the ice trying to survive. The one guy who did not survive actually was handing the rope to the other five people as it was dropped down.
Wow.
And when they went back to get him, he unfortunately was under the ice and didn't survive. But you know, he was the hero of the day, along with another guy named Lenny Skutnik, who actually jumped from the shoreline into the water to go save people.
Wow.
Yeah, so if you have an opportunity to watch that video, it's like I said, it's probably the most dramatic rescue I've ever seen on video. As all you guys know, every May we have Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Day. This is our, beyond this display is our Hall of Remembrance, where we commemorate all the officers who have passed away. The photos you see in there right now are from 2021. We're in the process of updating for line of duty deaths during 2022, of which there were 224. There'll also be another 330 some officers' names added to the wall, for a total of 500 some officers being added to the wall that were just engraved a couple weeks ago. The artifacts you see here are mementos that people have left at the wall to commemorate their fallen friends and their fallen family members. This is just a tip of the iceberg of the collection. That's, we have a warehouse in Virginia where everything else is displayed, and they rotate things out occasionally. If you choose to go in the Hall of Remembrance, there are some computer terminals in there where you can punch in the names of anybody you know who may have made that eternal sacrifice, and give you a little bit about their story. Also, a display of the Police Unity Bicycle Tour, if you guys are familiar with that, that about 25% of museum funding comes from that.
Mm.
And that's about all I have for you at this point.
Perfect.
Any questions? I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. This is awesome.
Absolutely. Beautiful.
Sure.
Really appreciate your time.
Yeah.
Well, it's my pleasure.
Wow.
I'd love so much to take care.
Make sure we get a picture.